Carl. Welcome.
Roland.
I'm glad you're back. I'm glad you're back.
Thank you.
Anyway, last week, for those who are regular listeners to us, we had our resident political analyst, Alan Marcus,
yes,
on. And, you know, we only got to just a few little topics on the political arena that's changing so rapidly in this country.
Agreed.
That we've asked him to come back on this week. And, Alan, thank you again for joining us.
Always a pleasure. Hey, listen, since I was on with you last, we've had a breathtaking election overseas, so we have so much more to talk about.
You know, well, let's start with Netanyahu. Are you surprised at that?
Well, I think the biggest surprise is that the people who ran his campaign were closely linked to President Obama. David Axelrod, who ran Obama's first campaign for president, ran the opposition campaign. I guess he should have stayed in Chicago. And as of a few minutes ago, is the last I heard, the president has still not called Netanyahu to congratulate him. I guess there's some soreness left over from the Netanyahu's appearance before Congress and other things. But, you know, this president calls third world dictators to congratulate him on beheadings almost. I can't believe he didn't call the one head of democracy in the Middle East.
You know something, Alan, I want to get a quick note. As you know, I just got back from Europe. And that was the topic of the day as we were enjoying every meal I ever went to. But I will tell you this. In Europe, he does not sit well with European leaders at all. And the people, surprisingly so.
Well,
they are not Netanyahu fans.
The failure to go to France to commemorate the terrible tragedies in France when terrorism really hit home in Paris.
Yes.
I think that really had an impact. You know, we've spoken about this in the past, but that iconic photo of all of these world leaders standing together arm in arm, and the one person missing was the leader, alleged leader of the free world, President Obama.
Yeah, but that's not what Carl was talking
about.
That's
not what I was mentioning about. I'm talking about Netanyahu. The Zionist Party, his opposition during this last election, did extraordinarily well in terms of the European circle. And, as of course, the ties with Europe and Israel are very, very strong for historical reasons. We know, and we know all about that. The point is that Netanyahu did not do very well with European leaders, and the talk of the conversation in Europe was opposed to Netanyahu winning again, not pro-Netanyahu, and I was very surprised at that, but it really, they were vocal about it.
I'm not that terribly surprised, Colin, I'll tell you why, and I apologize for interrupting and getting ahead of it, but it's the same thought. Netanyahu's very strong views will not cut well with a lot of people. When he told Jews in France, hey, leave this place, come to Israel, we'll welcome you. That was not well received in France by French leaders.
Absolutely correct.
And the invitation, which was really extended in Germany and other countries in Europe and middle European nations, wasn't. You know, that's, you're basically saying, hey, look, he's saying that it's like the 1930s. Jews aren't welcome. That's wrong. That's terrible. He shouldn't say that. It would be the same thing as coming to the United States and saying that any people, whether they be Jews, Catholics, Presbyterians, Blacks, Hispanics, leave here, you know, because you'll be more welcome there. We wouldn't accept that very well either. I think we also have to look on the fact that to win the election, Netanyahu basically turned far right, made a quick right-hand turn, and said there'll be no two-state solution with the Palestinians. And that, first off, that puts the United States in a terrible position, because the United States will now probably break with Israel and vote in the UN on a two-state solution, which they had hoped to negotiate with Israel. And the second thing is, it forces Netanyahu into a position I think he rather enjoys, frankly, and that is, let's just defend Israel. Let's not worry about anybody else. I don't care about my relationships with the United States. They'll still be a trading partner. Who else are they going to trade with around here? And I'm defending the Israeli people. Israelis, frankly, like that.
Yes, they do. And you know, there's responsibility for not having a negotiated peace on all sides. Ours, theirs, and in between.
Couldn't agree with you more, Alan. But the fact is that I'm not certain that you can ever have a negotiated peace in that part of the world. People have been trying probably since the Balfour Declaration, or at least the 1940s, post-war, up until 1948, when the State of Israel came into being. But the Palestinians were kicked out of Jordan, and so they became, you know, they took the strip of land, which isn't theirs, but they're saying, well, it's got to be someone's. We've got to have a place to go. So I can see their position. But at the same time, the Israelis are saying we need secure borders. And every time we give any of these people I put in quotes, I apologize, these people a place, the next thing they're doing is lobbing missiles into us. So I'm not sure, and I hate to be negative on the subject. I like to be an optimist on the potential for peace, but I don't think there's going to be peace. As you and I have discussed in the past, the last time that there was really an extended period of peace in Israel is when Richard Nixon was president. Right in the closing days of his presidency, when he rearmed Israel so that they could be strong against Syria, the price Israel paid was they had to allow the Egyptian Third Army to retreat back into Egypt. That allowed eventually the restoration of relations between Egypt and Israel, which was a good thing for a while until it led to the assassination of Sadat, and now we've had all kinds of upheaval since. No good deed goes unpunished in the Middle East.
All right. Let's move from the Middle East back to...
Did I lose you there?
No, I've got it.
No, not at all.
You didn't. And specifically on the Balfour Declaration, you and I will have a conversation about that, but interesting. Go.
I look forward to that.
All right. Alan, Jeb Bush, let's talk about him for a quick second.
Sure.
Now, he's maneuvering and trying to both associate and disassociate his family's past with his own vision of the future.
You know, there is a great Bob Hope movie, The Pale Face, in which Bob Hope is mistaken for a gunslinger. And now Black Bart calls him out into the street. And so everybody's giving him advice. He shoots from the left, so lean to the right. The sun's in a high, so look low. If he does all of these things, he's going to become a pretzel. And that's really where Jeb Bush is putting himself, because he's trying to get both the anti-Bush and pro-Bush people. He's trying to get the best of his father and brother's administrations and leave the worst behind. But you know what? So far he's accomplishing it, it seems.
Well, it does. Anything more on him? Because I want to move on to Hillary.
Then we got to leave Bob Hope behind, too. I think that Jeb Bush has done a couple of quick things that we should mention. He has really started to dominate the contributions, the money in the Republican primary. He moved very quickly and cut off a lot of the other pretenders to that nomination, including Governor Christie. I think Governor Walker is still in it to a degree and has some support, but Bush did a terrific job there. I think that Bush is also battle-tested, but he can only succeed in some ways if Hillary Clinton is the nominee, so that he doesn't have the legacy issue biting at his heels.
Right. Did you notice that his mother, Barbara Bush, finally endorsed the fact that her son, another Bush, was running for the presidency, and she urged people to give some donations to cover campaign expenses.
That's very early in the campaign for Mrs. Bush. I know the Bushes a little. I knew Jeb Bush's father, George Bush, former president, better, actually when he was a Republican national chairman. But I could tell you the leader in that family aren't the two former presidents and the one pretender to the throne. It's Barbara Bush.
Absolutely. Yeah,
it's
absolutely.
Mom. Yeah.
Now, she's the one they all fear also, by the way. If Barbara Bush says to Jeb, I don't want you to run, he ain't running. So this was a real important nod
for
him.
But last year she said, we've had enough Bushes in the White House, if you remember.
Yes, and she's come. I guess she's come around. But I think that Barbara Bush is one of the most interesting first ladies of all time, terribly underrated. She really should be up there in the pantheon when people are talking about people who had influence without the title.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. Okay. Agreed.
Alan, I'm going to ask you to stick around for the next segment, if you would, because there's still a lot more to talk about. Even we just never can get to the end of the political arena in this country.
I look forward to coming back.
Who was it that said at the New York Times, Brian Kastner, it's a sideshow within a sideshow?
Boy, indeed it is, isn't it?
Carl, now it's you and me.
All right, we're going to continue. Alan, you're going to stay with us.
No, wait a minute, Alan. It's you, Carl, and Herman Cain.
And Herman.
and the ghost of Herman Cain.
And the ghost. Right. He rides well into the night. Carl Sabatino with Roland Smith. Alan Marcus is going to stay with us. This is Smith Sabatino, America Weekend on the Envision Radio Network. Stay with us.
Think Green. Harrison with you. The Mayo Clinic is reporting some 10% of Americans will get ulcers at some time. Peptic ulcers are marked by open sores on the inner lining of the stomach or small intestine, even the esophagus. If anyone's ever had these, they're brutally painful and the medicines have horrible side effects and cause endless discomfort. But believe it or not, we can now thank some scientists in Saudi Arabia who say they found a natural and safe alternative ulcer treatment, which we here in America call arugula, and throw in our salads without a second thought. The World Journal of Gastroenterology confirms the research by showing that albino rats with ulcers had huge reductions in stomach acid. And get this, the same rats pre-treated with arugula extract were protected from ulcers despite exposure to a host of toxins and stresses. From the Greeniverse.
Think Green with Harrison at thinkgreenradio.com.
Now, cheap psych tricks with Dr. Buff.
And Dr. Buff here. Do you still sleep with your favorite teddy bear? Is your security blanket still warm after all these years? No need to be ashamed. You're not alone. Here's the developmental science of it. Teddy bears, security blankets, technically they're referred to as transitional objects, and they're designed to help us pass from one childhood milestone to the next, but many adults still use them. In fact, 20% of all females, and are you ready for this, 5% of all males, still continue to sleep with their favorite teddy bear. What's the cheap psychological trick? Call it a teddy bear, security blanket, favorite pillow, or even athletic jersey. In difficult times, if something so simple provides comfort and security, hey, go for it. A comforting device may just provide a soft competitive edge. Check out my book, Cheap Psychological Tricks for Parents, at drbuff.com.
Don't complain about your cable bill going up and up and up. Do something about it. Grab a pencil and jot down this special number.
Call 888-359-MY-TV.